Well, let's take your phone calls this hour with Dr. Leskowitz as we talk about the power of intention. His phenomenal study, his research that he did there at Fenway Park in Boston, Massachusetts. And we'll be back with your calls in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Rick, do you find out, are other scientists or doctors conducting studies like this beyond what's happening at Princeton and what you're doing?
Well, there are some organizations that are fostering this kind of work, and I think Princeton is the key. But there's you also mentioned the Institute of Noetic Science, where Dean Radin is working on it. There's also the group that calls themselves Scientifically Inclined Mystics and Mystically Inclined Scientists. That's ISSEM. It's ISSSEEM. It's the International Study for the International Society for the Study of Subtle Energy and Energy Medicine. And they're the gizmo guys that are coming up with devices to try and detect these subtle forces that most machines haven't been able to detect, but the human biocomputer can detect it, but machines are just catching up now. So there's a sort of a whole underground of this kind of fringe science or weird science that, when you go to the conferences, everybody is full of excitement about new discoveries, but when you go back home, nobody's heard anything about it. So that's one of the frustrations, is how to bring this information to a larger audience. And that's where we think the movie and the companion book have sort of hit the sweet spot there, and we'll be able to do that.
Okay, let's go to the phone calls. Our Vada, Colorado. Drew is with us on the wild card line. Hey, Drew, thanks for calling.
Hiya, George. Thank you for putting me on. Doctor, thank goodness you're doing what you're doing. I'm an acupuncturist. I have a marine biology degree, and I've been writing for the California Acupuncture Journal for 6 years, trying to figure out how acupuncture works. I think we put it together here. The lateral line on a fish is the same thing as an acupuncture channel, and they're sensitive to electromagnetic forces and light and vibration. So I think you got your receptors for your person to person, just like watching fish swim in the ocean, Doc.
Well, that's a great analogy, and we're going to be using some clips of birds, flocks of birds in flight and schools of fish swimming, because they're so perfectly synchronized that it's not that there's a lead fish and every other fish follows by reflex. They all make the same change at the same time. So there's some sort of instantaneous transmission. And I think the acupuncture electromagnetic field interface is where this is all happening.
Rick, how did you get involved in this as a psychiatrist, mainstream medicine? How did you start doing this?
Well, I think the most important career move I did was take a few years off before going to medical school. Really, because it helped me sort of break the brainwashing cycle. And I did some traveling around the world, and I got to see that different people do things differently in other societies. That was a slogan my mother always taught us, but to see it in action made me realize that everything, even Western medicine, is just one way of doing things. And so I came into it sort of with an openness. I learned how to meditate before starting medical school. It was basically a stress management survival technique. But it was sort of the thin end of the wedge, meditation. Mm-hmm. It's like a gateway drug. It leads to yoga, and yoga leads to energy awareness, and energy awareness leads to energy healing, and there's no going back from that point on.
All right, let's go to Rebecca, Santa Rosa, California. First-time caller. Hey, Rebecca, go ahead.
Hi. I have a question for Eric. Have you or would you consider using a recorded game from TV or radio to test the response from fans? Because you'd said if you could go back in time, if you're able to go back in time. But a recording is kind of going back in time. And I just thought that'd be really cool to see if anything could be picked up that way.
That's a great idea, and so there is some evidence that, for example, energy intuitives can view someone's behavior on a television or a DVD and note what's going on in their energy field. So I think what you're saying is exactly true, that a recording of a game that happened years ago, the impact should still be measurable. So that's a great study. I'm jotting down a note right here to pursue that.
Yeah, I thought I just Because I really think that, you know, like as they say, when people die, sometimes, you know, their spirits hang around or body energy hangs around. And I just thought that'd be really cool. So I hope you come back and let us know.
Well, thank you. I'd love to.
Are there helpers involved here, Eric? You know, and I'm thinking about angels or some kind of force that could be out there moving this along.
Well, I can't rule it out. I don't know how you'd specifically test for it. I know that Gary Schwartz at the University of Arizona in Tucson has some very ingenious using biophoton measurements to invite spirits to make an impact on the photographic emulsion, if you will. And there's some new papers out in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine that are suggestive. Whether there really are angels in the outfield, as that movie title would have us believe, I suppose so. I mean, they, you know, there's spirit helpers in all other aspects of life. Why not in professional sports as well?
Good point. Skype caller, Monterey Bay, California. It's Don's turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Don. Fire away.
Hey, George. Thank you for taking my call. Doctor, mm-hmm. This is a wonderful subject. I wanted to ask you all, before I ask the main question, are you familiar with the Esalen Institute out here at Big Sur, California?
Actually, the Esalen is sort of the mecca for all of this new age,
okay.
New science stuff.
Great. So you're going to love this story. The founder of that institute, Michael Murphy, back in the 70s, wrote a book that ties this subject into golf called Golf in the Kingdom. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am, and it's a great book.
It is. So I hope you won't mind me referencing the statement that psychic energy can add 10 yards to any drive. And to further discuss that, he was talking about a friend of his, a candlestick that had the best whammy he'd ever seen. And he could make the opposing batter strike out any time he wanted to, but he couldn't use it that much. However, one day he wanted to really push the limits of it, and he helped the Giants pitcher pitch a one-hitter. But unfortunately, somebody out in center field died of a heart attack.
Oh, my gosh.
Which brings the question up of, is there psychic backlash to creating an imbalance in positive flow?
Well, it's actually a very profound question. I just want to follow up by noting that I had a chance to interview Michael Murphy for the movie, and he's just a fascinating storyteller. And he did tell the very story that you described. I had this evening jotted down a note, a reminder to see if I could bring up that whole incident. So you've synchronicitously given me that chance, because Michael described how a couple of his friends and he at Candlestick sent out a key whammy, an energy whammy against Bob Gibson, who, George, you'll remember, is probably the most intimidating pitcher of the last 50 years, and literally knocked him off the mound once by the power of their energy projection. They were so spooked by it. It just really surprised them how much of an impact it could have that they swore it off. And I think that's because they recognize that it did not come from a heart-filled spiritual place. So they began to taste literally what black magic is. I think that's an important distinction. You know, white magic is using these energies for healing and the greater good, whereas black magic is manipulating them for more ego-oriented purposes. And that would include things like, you know, putting a whammy on your opponent, so that you or your team could win. And that gets back to the point that actually we had an opportunity to interview a Tibetan Lama for the movie. He wasn't particularly conversant about baseball and had never heard of the Red Sox, but he did know about compassion and karma, and he urged us to put some of this competitive energy into relieving human suffering rather than figuring out ways to beat your opponent. So that was very humbling to get the big picture from someone like that.
Okay, let's go to Phoenix, Arizona. It's Tim Turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Tim, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing, George?
Good.
Yeah, this totally dovetails with what he was just talking about, the whammy. I wanted to talk about unintentional intention. And a long time ago, you know, Art Bell, he warned against mass consciousness because sometimes it can throw whammy without you wanting it to. And but just a couple of years ago, he was doing a Saturday night show, and he was talking about he was on a cruise ship and how some of the time he spent a lot of time watching television, and frequently going through the channels, he'd hear this loud pitch man just constantly pitching these products, and he kept bringing it up over and over again. And in my mind, I thought, was that Billy Mays he's talking about? Because, you know, I have the same problem. You know, whenever they go to commercial, first of all, they play the commercial too loud anyway. anyway, so he kept saying, you know, this guy is so loud, I can't stand his shrill voice. You know, and then I'd say, I can't stand it either. Then I started thinking, well, there must be millions of other people who can't stand his voice either. And then, like, 2 or 3 months later, he dies. You know, and I wouldn't hurt a fly. You know, you have no ill will, but I think that was a case of unintentional intention and a whammy like what you talked about.
Well, I think he was putting out maybe a more energy of manipulation rather than altruistic energy, and you know, it comes back to bite you. That's why people who hold on to resentments for years and years, it doesn't injure the person they're angry at so much as it injures themselves. And, you know, I think you raised a good point about unintentional intention. This is an opportunity for people to become conscious, because we really do control our destiny and our collective destiny if we can get into a point of conscious awareness and decide what is it that we want to focus on. What is our highest intention? There's so much media pressure in, you know, direction of fear and hopelessness and consumerism. It takes a bit more effort to kind of decide what do I want to focus on. So, you know, George had talked about his experience in St. Louis during the tornado now. I mean, this is a great opportunity for collective group intention for healing and assistance to St. Louis or Japan. You know, there's a lot of ways that we can use our positive intention.
Is there anything it can't do, Rick? Or if people think it can't work, then will it not?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head that our beliefs are the main limiting factor. And we're basically conditioned to think of ourselves as quite limited. You know, we can develop a few skills or talents. But once you get into the power of consciousness, it just might be infinite. You know, there are certainly a few exceptional human beings who can do truly extraordinary things, but they've often said that, you know, what I've done, you can do, and it's a matter of opening to these possibilities. And that's why these are such exciting times, because there are techniques available now to release some of these blocks. For example, in athletic performance, there's a new breed of sports psychologists who are using acupressure, actually. There's a form of self-acupressure called emotional freedom technique, or EFT, and people can release their doubts and negativities. And so this is where athletes can use it themselves. A couple whose work I know, Greg Warburton, based out in Oregon, he worked with the OSU pitcher who won the NCAA tournament and became the MVP, taught him to tap on his meridians between innings. There's actually a great clip on his website from ESPN showing the pitcher tapping on his meridians to balance himself, and the announcers have no clue what he's doing, and they're sort of trying to guess and figure out what's up with that. And Tom Hansen is also another sports psychologist who's working with some major leaguers to teach them their own energy balancing technique. So it's really spreading, and consciously deciding what your intent is the key.
Why did the ancients know this? Why did we forget it?
Wow. Yeah, that's a big question. And, you know, you can say everything from we just got so infatuated with technology and the physical materialistic world. You could talk about, I know this is more in alignment with some of the shows you've had, George, but you could talk about the Illuminati and how they've made an effort to keep some of this knowledge hidden. Whatever the reason is, there seems to be a really huge upsurge of interest in it now. And it's a good question for the historians. And I don't really have the definitive answer on that one.
Okay, let's go to Judy in Miami, Florida. Hi, Judy. Thanks for calling.
Hi, George. I've been trying to, I just tried to get through once and I got through. It's the power of intention.
There you go.
I have a device that I use for energy, and it's called a Skio. I thought I heard you mention Professor Nelson.
Yes, Roger Nelson from the Global Consciousness Project.
Mm-hmm. No, this is Professor William Nelson. He invented this like 20-some years ago when he was with NASA. It has time travel on it. I haven't used it yet, but I've been studying it for about 4 years. I'm an RN. And when I saw this, I thought, oh, it's God's technology. This is what I can do. And I was 68 years old, and I've been learning it, and it's so fascinating. And when I heard you tonight, I said, I have to call in and find out, because I've been trying to help the soldiers coming back. I know Dr. Gray, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, that Dr. Gray.
Mm-hmm, right.
John Gray. Yeah.
Yes. He has been counseling some of the soldiers before they get back, and marriage counseling. And we have stress reduction on here, and it would be very helpful. We've tried to volunteer to use it on anybody that comes back from Iraq or anywhere, because we're having so many suicides.
Oh, yeah,
and I just wondered if you're trying to use any of this energy for our guys over there.
Well, that's a great question, because baseball is not the most important thing going on in the world right now. And certainly the epidemic of post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury in returning veterans is a bit more important. The EFT approach, the sort of self-acupressure where you tap on your own points and desensitize trauma, is actually amazingly successful for post-traumatic stress disorder. And the national organization there, they called the Association for Comprehensive Energy Psychology, has put together some really excellent controlled studies that are showing better results with PTSD than conventional cognitive behavioral therapy or medication therapy. And really at the point where the, you know, the Pentagon Department of Defense hasn't embraced it, but it's harder and harder to ignore. For folks who want to look it up, the research, the key researchers there are Dawson Church and David Feinstein. And I think that's going to change the field of PTSD treatment rapidly, because there's some, you know, demonstration videos online that show in the course of a week's treatment a total remission of PTSD. So
a lot of dramatic workers out there, Rick. We're going to come back with you, and we're going to take some final phone calls on this split show tonight on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie. We shall be right back. Well, next hour, Mike Barra joins us, co-author with Richard Hoagland of Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA, and also the author of The Choice, As We Use Consciousness, Thought, and Physics of the Mind to Reshape the World. We'll talk about that next hour on Coast to Coast AM. And when we come back, we'll take final phone calls with Dr. Rick Leskowitz as we talk about intention on Coast to Coast AM. Rick, scientists are running around CERN in the Switzerland trying to find the God's particle, and I'm wondering if that particle might be responsible for some of this intention.
Well, I when I was listening to Dr. Kaku at the beginning, I felt like asking him, can string theory explain the Red Sox?
Yeah, exactly. Or the curse.
Well, you know, the curse, that goes back to what people were talking about before, that I think Red Sox fans believed in the curse, and
mm-hmm.
therefore the curse was effective.
That's a good point.
It was only when we came to the edge of almost winning in 2003 that we realized, hey, we can do this. And, you know, the curse kind of dropped away. It was a self-fulfilling prophecy more than anything.
Or the group that put the curse on decided to secretly take it off. Let's go to Calgary, Canada. We'll go out to our friend Naeem on Coast to Coast. Hello, Naeem.
Hi. How are you, George?
Good. Thanks for holding so long.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you for taking my call. The question I have is, I guess it's related more to, because I remember your guest saying that I guess the psychic thought would be considered the magnetic field, correct? Or, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're saying that, like, when you have a bunch of group of people together, they're, I guess I guess their psychic intention or whatever is kind of grouped in as, the magnetic field is kind of summed up, or
it's
how does that
it's collective.
Yeah, I think one way of thinking about it is that we can influence other people through the quality of our magnetic field. And one of the callers mentioned about how fish have a lateral line that detects electromagnetic energy, and that the human nervous system can also detect this. So one way that we can pick up hunches or senses about other people is through this, literally, this sixth sense.
Are the many better than the one for intention?
You know, that's a question that I had the opportunity of asking Esther Hicks. She's the person who works with Abraham, and the sort of the whole power of intention thing really got started through her. I was called on to be in the hot seat at one of her workshops, and I asked her a series of questions about group intention and competitive sports, and her answer surprised me. She believes that the most important factor is having one person who really is in alignment. Mm-hmm. That the group support helps, but far and away the most important factor is having the individual athletes believing in their own intention and being clear about that. So, you know, fan support is nice, but she wasn't going to give the fans credit for the Red Sox World Series victory.
So if there's just that one person, that one incredibly strong person, they may be able to pull this off with or without the support of the others.
That's right. That's right.
That is dramatic. Let's go to California. Fred's there on Coast to Coast. Hey, Fred.
Hi, I'm a first-time caller. I'm a physician, endocrinologist. I was just listening to this program from a medical scientific standpoint. Hi, Rick.
Hi.
Hi. A few comments, if I may.
Sure.
And this is done out of utter respect both to George, a wonderful host, and to you, sir, for your interesting scientific work. Firstly, the terminology of positive and negative energy. That does give it a connotation of almost a judgment. From the scientific point of view, I question that labeling, and I'm sure you meant it, you know, as an arbitrary definition, and I respect that. My sense is more a polarized energy or directional energy,
mm-hmm.
maybe more neutral in terms of any emotional content attributed to it. So, for example, if you're talking about a sports event, rather than saying positive and negative, one may say polarized towards one side and therefore, by definition, not in favor of the other side, or directional energy, directed in favor of side A versus side B. Now, the history of directional energy in human history goes back thousands of years. And directional energy, as I see it, is actually violent. Because if you have directional energy in a plane, it sets itself in opposition to directional energy in another plane. And that may be the source of conflict going back from human history all the way back in time. So then what is compassion? Compassion is actually non-directional energy. It does not take sides. Which you may want to use the word love. So to me, compassion and positive energy, which may have been used in a similar vein, which I may have misinterpreted, and I apologize if I did, I don't see it the same. Positive energy, which may have been utilized as directional energy, is actually unhealthy, whereas compassion is tranquility and peace and non-directional. Now, the scientific evidence which supports the unhealth of directional energy, I'm sure you're very aware of, Rick, was published in the New England Journal of Medicine a few years ago. And these were researchers from Germany who looked at the World Cup soccer, which was hosted in Munich, Germany in 1996. And they asked a simple question, in any major sporting event, like the World Cup soccer, which as we know, on the world stage is a huge sporting event.
Huge, yeah.
And they asked a simple question, is there an uptick of myocardial infarction rates during such emotionally charged events, because you have sports fans who are mellow, mild, avid sport fans, and sometimes very, very violent in terms of their alliance with one particular side, as we often may have seen in sports like soccer and the like. So what this cardiologist did, just for the interest of those audience who have not seen the paper, is they measured a year before World Cup Soccer in 96 and ventilated myocardial infarction in most emergency rooms, major emergency rooms out of Munich, Germany. And they got a basal rate of myocardial infarction rates. Then they measured myocardial infarction, which is published in the paper, at the time of World Cup Soccer. And because Germany was hosting it, they said they had many, many fans from Germany who were allied in favor of the German fan, of the German side, i.e. polarized energy or directional energy, as I would call it, rather than positive energy. And again, I apologize if I'm making this discrimination in a very,
Let's get Dr. Rick's explanation for that. See, when I talk about positive and negative energy, Rick, I'm thinking of it in terms of good versus evil. What about you?
Well, I think the caller brings up a good point, and there is a little bit of laxity in our language here, that it's sort of a popular term to distinguish positive versus negative energy. It is an emotional judgment about how the energy is being used or intended, and I think his terminology of directional energy makes a lot of sense. Another way of talking about it that doesn't have the emotional judgment is just the frequency of the energy, and that there's a energetic frequency to anger or bitterness that's a lower vibration than compassion or empathy. And so that may be another way of talking about it that doesn't, you know, I think everyday language, we're into black and white type of distinctions. And so positive energy, negative energy, I think bottom line, it's all energy, and it's how you work with it that determines its impact.
Let's go to El Paso, Texas. Helen's with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Helen.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call. Doctor and George, I have a question. When people are concentrating, do they have to be isolated? And what can people do? Well, I better explain. I worked with a girl that was very nice, and a whole bunch of other men and women didn't care for her. And they said they would concentrate to make her be disliked. And it worked. And I tried to help her, but ours didn't work. I mean, just to stop it. Were we supposed to be alone, or what?
You know, there are mental, emotional, energetic influences floating around all the time. We sort of walk through a sea of it. And if we're not conscious and in control of our own energy system, we fall victim to that. So it's important to develop some sort of personal practice that each individual has to sort of clear their own energy field, ground their energy field, and it could be simple as doing something that you love to do, or it could be a specific energy art. It's hard to say what was going on in the situation that you talked about, but if that girl was able to learn some practices that help her directly in her own confidence and groundedness, she might be less prone to the mental influences of other people.
It's dramatic how this works, though, Eric, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this stuff is it's very exciting. You know, in my clinical work, I work with chronic pain patients at Spalding Rehab Hospital. Using some of these energy balancing techniques can, you know, reverse symptoms that have been around for a long, long time. But also for people who don't have a particular medical symptom, it just helps you. Oh, I don't know. It helps you inhabit your body more completely so that you can do what you want to do in your life and not get caught up in all the cross currents that are out there.
Jason, Yucaipa, California, you're up. Wildcard line. Hi, Jason. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How's it going?
Okay.
I'm a first-time caller, new listener since about 4 months. And
good to have you with us.
Thanks for that. I got halfway in on the program tonight, and I just wanted to share a little story. When I was in high school, there was a friend of mine, that fellow classmate, and we had two different classes together, and I'd seen him earlier in the day, and then anyway, I guess he ditched to take off to a party later in the day that I didn't know about. And anyway, I got to the last class of the day, our English class, And the teacher was asking around, and she's like, has anyone seen Jeff? And I was like, you know, I knew him because I had him earlier in the day. And I said, well, no, he's dead. It was an off-comment joke. And anyway, the next day rolls around, and I go to class, and it's like our second period class, and looking around, I notice everyone on campus is just kind of got this down mood and stuff. And anyway, I go to our fourth period science class, which Jeff and I used to share, and I notice everyone in class, some of the girls are crying, and I'm like, all of a sudden I ask, well, where's Jeff? And they're like, didn't you hear? He died last
night.
And yeah, so it was like anywhere from 8 to 10 hours after that, they had a car accident, and he was sitting in the middle of this pickup truck, and he went through the windshield into a telephone pole. Needless to say, I've never made any off-comment jokes about people dying since that period ever. So,
yeah. Well, here's my question too for you, Rick, based on what happened to Jason. One, I don't think it was his intention to kill the person, and I don't think he did that by any means. My question is did he have some kind of psychic ability, not really know it, but truly picked up on the fact that he saw the fact that he had died?
You know, I think that's much more likely, George, and I would certainly urge Jason, I hope he is not carrying any residual guilt about that, because any one person's death is a matter of their higher self or their soul's decision, and not just a random joke by a friend or a neighbor. But it is quite possible that he had some sort of deep intuitive hunch that wasn't fully formed, and it sort of came out as a joke, because people have premonitions all the time. One of the scientists that we interviewed, Dr. Larry Dossey, has written a book about premonitions,
mm-hmm.
and
yes.
it's really striking how many incredible stories that are not just coincidence, that they're very, very specific, that multiple people throughout the generations have had. So that's a book I would recommend to listeners to check up on, this whole sense of where does this information come from and how do we tap into it.
On one of our wildcard lines, Carol is in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hi, Carol. Go ahead.
Hi. I've been listening to you for years, every single night. Couldn't
Thank
help
you.
Want to bring this to your attention. Dr. J.J. Hertak,
sure.
I'm sure you know, was having a seminar in St. Louis, and the tornadoes came right over his hotel. So 300 people plus this powerful man were praying, and what a miracle of miracles. Nobody was killed, so I have to give him some credit. I'm sure everybody else was praying, but that was a... I'm sure that he had something to do with that.
I wonder if the tornado veered away from his particular hotel.
They were hoping they wouldn't lose electricity, but they also were praying for everybody else. Yeah, instead of hitting the airport. But now his soul was, you know, killed, and they thought that was quite miraculous. So
yeah, that's great. That's
isn't
great.
That wonderful? That's certainly intention. You know, they were praying hard.
Yeah, great.
Good point. Great story, too. Thanks, Carol. Yeah, we got hit big time here, Rick. It is a miracle that nobody was killed.
It's wonderful, yeah.
22-mile path.
Wow.
Up to 200 miles an hour. This thing just went right through. Next up, we go to Rosemary in Boulder, Colorado. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Rosemary.
Hi. Hi, George. I enjoy your program all the time.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. I wanted to share with you something that my mentor, Janet Menken, the nurse who founded the Healing Touch program that's taught to nurses all over the world.
Sure. Yeah.
I was very privileged to be able to work with her and study under her when she first developed the program. However, it was something that she said about intentions that I thought was very relevant. And as she said that we should not get our egos in the way of any work that we're doing with other people as far as their healing. Our intention should be only for their highest and best, and to leave the rest up to the universe, which has ultimate wisdom. We don't. And sometimes that ultimate healing is death, but that's not for us to decide. We only lend our energies and our intentions for the highest and the best for that particular person. And I would say that goes for the world. If you're trying to influence weather, perhaps you should step back and say that you want to influence it for the highest and best purpose, instead of wanting a specific outcome, which is more tied to your ego. So what would you think about that situation?
I agree with your analysis that usually it's our ego that comes up with our sense of what's best for this particular person or situation. So the way to sort of bypass that is, just as you said, to focus on the highest good for the person or all concerned. But also each of us as individuals can have access to specific higher wisdom to know more directly how to focus. Because certainly we don't know what someone's, another person's soul purposes or higher purposes, and we can offer our light and support in their journey, but what our individual preference is isn't usually the deciding factor. For sure.
Eric, 30 seconds left. What's next for you?
Well, we're going to finish the movie. We do need to raise some money to come to completion, so hopefully your listeners can click the donate button on our website. The book, the companion book, is already out. But once the movie is out, I would like to use it as a vehicle to do some training and workshops along these intentionality lines, because baseball is something that's more accessible in some of these esoteric sciences. So,
all right. Well, you keep in touch with us. It's a fascinating study indeed. Up next with our split show, Mike Barra joins us. I snorted. I sounded like a little pig there. Mike Barra joins us on Coast to Coast AM.